And Elena, yeah, Elena's on and Tina's on.
Hi.
Hi, Elena.
Good show.
Nope.
Okay, so it's 6 o'clock, and we'll be opening the Boulder Planning Commission work meeting. It's for February 22nd, which is a Thursday, 2024, and it's 6 o'clock. So here we have Nancy Tosta, Colleen Thompson, Daryl Fuller. Online, we have Tina Carlson and Elena Hughes. Also, Daryl has just come.
Is it there? I heard Mark.
So this means a work meeting, and it's going to be a little bit different than any work meeting that we've had per se, mainly because we really want to get the public input tonight. And we, as a planning commission, have been discussing changes to RV uses in the town for a few months now. And so tonight, what we're looking for is information from the public and the planning commission on how to even go about making some changes. So because it's a work meeting, there won't be any decisions made tonight. It will strictly be information. In the future, what we're looking for is having language crafted so that we can have a formal public hearing as far as on ordinance language, and that's what we're hoping will come next. So, because this is different, what we're going to try is, like I said, this is going to be very different tonight. So, bear with me. So, what we're going to do is, each of these, does everybody have a copy of what we're talking about tonight? I assumed, yeah, that everybody does. So what I have in front of me are five, and I added one. I had six, no change. We never, like, that's an option, isn't it? It was for the housing. But anyway, I just wrote it
Some of
myself.
these could all be no change.
Okay, that's true too. So
Future.
anyway, so there's five different categories that we're going to talk about tonight. And under each one of those categories is one to three sentences. It's been suggested that the Planning Commission, as we go through, we're going to go through each one of these items singly. And it's been suggested how this works, that each. And at that point, we let the community have a say. I was going to suggest that we do for the public input, maybe the raising of hands. But I see that we don't have a lot of input. So Nancy, I think, I mean, I thought that was an option that we could use. It would make it easier, and yet, we don't have a lot right now. Okay, so as I said before, this is all on discussing changes to the use of RVs in town. So I'm going to go ahead and just start off right now. And so number one on our list is to allow RVs. Oh, let's see, before I go, does anybody have any questions? Does any planning commission have any questions? So did you hear what the format as far as what we're going to do? Yeah, okay, I thought you had. So, okay, so I'm just going to go ahead then. So number one is to allow RVs to be used. Oh, gosh, and I have to stop again. So we have a limited amount of time. I'm so sorry. I haven't done this for a while. So we have a limited amount of time. And so the other thing too is keeping our comments to the point, because it isn't a really big deal right now. And at the end of this session, we'll spend some time. I actually figured out how many minutes we would spend on each one of these items, and I'm not going to go into that as far as how much time we get and how much time the public gets. But I do want to recognize too that this could go on for a couple of hours. And at the end of the meeting, we do want to come, hopefully have something that we can submit to Lee as far as that goes, but nothing in stone. Okay, so I'm going to go back to one. So allow RVs to be used as permanent residences on any lot or parcel in Boulder. So A, under current code, RVs are defined as temporary and not allowed as permanent dwellings. Should this be considered or allowed? You know, planning commission, if anybody, planning commission has a comment, or if you just want to say yes or no, I think that we should have a yay or a nay and then a comment, so that we kind of know where we stand. Is that easy enough to do for you guys, like Jessica? Okay.
Yes.
So I'm going
finishing the lots.
And you know, the other thing too is I'm not really sure everybody has a comment right now on this. So another thing too, if we can get through this, we have plenty of time, we can go through this again and pick out maybe some things that are a little more controversial. Because I think everybody's had time. So we don't have any comments on A right now. Okay. Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Just for me.
And you can read that again if you want to, that statement, and then if you want to clarify it, or just go ahead.
So the question is, should we allow RVs as permanent residences anywhere in Boulder? And I guess to keep it short, in my mind, RVs are for recreation, not residences. And all the definitions of RVs that I've looked at across every jurisdiction, multiple jurisdictions, I haven't looked at every jurisdiction, but multiple jurisdictions, they define them as temporary, and explicitly prohibit their use as permanent dwellings. So I'm not sure why we would want to do something different in Boulder. It doesn't seem wise. It seems like this has been debated endlessly in many places. I want to acknowledge that we need more housing. I mean, we know we need more housing, and we've had our housing forum, and we've talked about having duplexes. We've talked about changing the zoning. And so there are other alternatives that I think we can explore. But so that said, I do want to point out, and this is something that John Durant has found, Grand County has put in place an experimental program over the last couple of years, looking at RVs and other alternative forms of housing as potential long-term dwellings. And they've looked at how to potentially put these into camp parks or RV parks, where they have certain constraints in terms of where they're located and what you can do there, but they are intended to provide housing in RVs or alternative forms. I suppose it could be teepees or yurts or other things, but basically to provide a way to provide some housing that aligns with the values in the community. So I think this is something we should explore, and there might be some lessons learned from this. So I'd like So I would just go on the record saying I don't think RV should be permanent housing.
So Daryl Fuller, I don't have a. So my opinion on number one is less formed than on other topics. I do have some perspective because we're building our place now, and we've been living in a 1985 Winnebago for I don't know how long. It's as amazing as you might imagine. Let me say that. Believe them whatsoever. So not permanent solutions. They're not designed to be permanent. I guess you could drop $100,000 on an RV, but yeah. There are some, they are different. We should recognize that there are differences. So whether it can be a permanent residence, that I don't know. Whether you can take an old cute trailer from the 50s and turn it into an office, I'm much more, I think that's totally different use than cooking, using the restroom, all these different things. As an actual domicile would require. And on top of that, we've had some fires here in the last couple of years. So if something is not designed for a particular use and it's used really heavily for years on end, that does present safety hazards. So those, I think, are considerations we should take into account. But yes, solutions for other things like seasonal housing, seasonal winter housing, that's a real concern, but we can't just ignore it.
Thank you. Tina, do you have anything to say, or Elena?
Unless Tina wants to go first. Yeah, I don't have a problem with permanent dwelling RVs. I think the thing I always come back to is, you know, if it doesn't cause a municipal concern for 90 days or for a year, why does it cause a municipal concern beyond that? So, yeah, for me, I'm fine with it.
Tina?
This has been a hard one because we have a situation where an RV was suggested to be put for temporary housing for an employee. So I think I could go either way on this one, but at this point, I think that's all I have to say. Thanks.
Yeah. So I think that's my issue too, is when we started this, it was a subject that had been brought up for the school, which we still, I don't know where that has gone, what direction that has gone in. Yeah, so that's farther down the line. But yeah, so I too am a little concerned about RVs being used as housing permanent dwellings and not temporary. So I'm going to open up to the public now. And I do want to say we're going to have to keep our comments a little bit shorter. I mean, just in general, I just want you all to, not shorter, but not yet. So we do need to keep moving this forward. So does anybody in the public have any comment on 1A? Well, yeah, but we're going to go through these. Because the thing I wanted to go through this paragraph.
You can okay. Think they need to.
Okay, so I don't see that anybody that we have any comments. Oh, John, I didn't see you.
You're just a part of the
group. Go ahead, John.
I've tried to be invisible tonight. John Grant, town council member, former planning commission member. Real quick, I think the word permanent is a complete distraction from what we're trying to do, which is address housing needs for local workers, which is largely also a seasonal need. The permanent does not mean is completely different than an indefinite duration or a renewable duration. So I think that's a total confusion to be using the term permanent and distracts us. I'll comment only briefly on the major distinction with RVs not being permanent. As best I could determine, was a compromise that the RV Manufacturers Association came up with because they wanted a clear distinction between the things that they manufactured under the vehicle codes and the things that HUD regulates under the building codes. And the compromise was that they would put a label in an RV saying it's for temporary use. And with some of the park models, it was a distinction without a difference, but it was a compromise they reached. So I think focusing on the fact that RVs are movable on demand and they're taxed as personal property, not real property, is a major distinction from a permanent house, which is treated as real property. Enough said.
Thank you, John. Okay, so do we have any more comments from the public?
Yes.
On number 1A,
I'm going to change that in just a minute. I don't want to change it. But that's what I'm going to do too.
Mark Nelson.
Will you turn it on, Martin? And you can scoot the chair to get out of the light.
Yeah,
you
don't scoot to the left. You scoot to the
light. You like to stare in the light.
You
can move it wherever you want.
Hello. Okay, Mark Nelson. I've got to preface this with saying that I'm very frustrated with this this idea of these RVs for permanent residents. I want to reiterate again that I've been following Boulder planning for over 35 years, and when planning was first initiated here, they talked about things that we wanted to avoid. Turning the town into a town that had a lot of RVs was one of the things we wanted to avoid. And we had RVs here, we've had mobile homes, we've had everything, and the idea was to gradually, create ordinances that allow the current one that existed to be left, but as they deteriorated and were removed, then they were granted non-conforming use status, but then as they deteriorated and were removed, then they would have to go into conforming use with the statutes. And
can you tell me, I don't know if you know how far, can you tell me whether you are for this or not?
Well, I can tell you I'm guessing, yes.
Okay, so
is that all you want to hear?
Yes, right now okay. It sort of is.
You don't want to hear the reasons?
Well, the whole thing okay. is this is going to go before a public comment, and right now what we're trying to do is, and I don't mean to cut you off, but I have to in a way because I have to get through all of this.
Okay, I'm just going
to
say
and
that.
So that your public, we're going to a public comment right. too. That's so
good. So I'm just going to say you didn't say yes or no when you brought this up, but I'm just going to say no, and I will just say that I have reasons for that.
Okay, yeah. That's great.
And I thought we were going to discuss a little bit with me here.
Thank you. So the thing that I want to make clear is, it's not that I don't want to hear anybody's information. I really need it to kind of be brief. And I'm sorry that I didn't. I wanted, I was going to do a hand raise as far as we go through this. And since this is an informal meeting and it's just a work meeting, I was going to have everybody raise their hand for each as we went through this. And then, because we want to know the Planning Commission, whether you're for it or not, because this information, these five items are going to go, that's what we're trying to find out, is whether they would be crafted for ordinances. And so I'm really looking for yes or no. And Nancy also said too, we can already tell So we're going to take one section at a time, not just 1A, 1B, 1C, because this, we're already seeing this congest a little bit. And so, so the other thing I still want to do this is, in the public, do you want to see that these RVs are considered for permanent dwellings? Yes or no? And I'm going to ask everybody to raise their hand for yes. Now. Sorry. Yes, because we're going to do this through the rest of the meeting now. So there's nobody on, basically, on Zoom, right?
Peg, and I think that's Dave, the one that says iPhone David.
Okay, so we have one yes in the audience.
Peg asking a question. She's raising her hand.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yes. So there's two then.
It's just Peg.
Yeah, I'm raising my hand.
Okay. Thank you, Peg.
That's called one by two.
Yes.
As for saying that she is okay with them being used as permanent residences.
Okay. And then so now I want everyone who says no, that they do not want them to be allowed as permanent dwellings.
No.
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 No. Okay, Dave. Okay, so we have three. Okay. All right, so I'm going to move on to B right now and C. So should these RVs be connected? And so we're going to go, so the Planning Commission now is going to I'm going to give you a chance to weigh in on this. And then we're going to take it back to the public. So B is, should these RVs be connected to septic, water, and appropriate power? If an RV is a permanent residence under current law, an ADU could be added that could also be an RV. Should this be considered or allowed?
That's two questions.
Yes, I know that. And we were... well, see, that's why, I mean, I'm...
I thought you were going to ask for B, yes or no.
I was.
C, yes.
Well, that's what we're trying to figure out, how we're getting through this meeting and how quickly we're doing it. So we did one, and now we're going to try two. And if that doesn't work, we're going to go back to just one. I mean, this, like I said, this is all brand new, and it's because we want to hear from the public. So let's just go ahead and do B right now. Should these RVs be connected to septic, water, and appropriate power? And I want to hear from the Planning Commission right now. Does anybody have a comment?
So connected to the light. So if they are used as permanent residences, then I think I don't think that's as necessary, because you have septic, you have a portable septic system you can use. You don't actually have to connect it to your septic. You can use these little dolly deals. I don't know. So I don't think it's as big of a requirement, but I'm not a big fan of permanent housing. So, but if we do let it go, I think we should have some flexibility on this one, because they could use solar.
Okay. Nancy, do you have a comment? Anybody else?
So I'm also not a big fan of permanent, but if they are, I think they should be connected to septic, water, and appropriate power, something other than an extension cord. Mm-hmm. Good point. Elena or Tina?
Yeah, it's been my understanding from my conversations with Lee that we don't really have to worry about this one, because it's already kind of built into the state rules and the general rules around RVs, like, meaning if they're there permanently, they do have to be connected. And maybe sometimes it's possible that some of them, you know, have like the internal septic situation and they go to Escalante to dump. But I don't think that we would be allowed from what I understand from Lee, they have to take care of their wastewater just like state rules, whether that's dumping or being connected to like if someone's building something and has their septic put in already or can connect to the septic on the property they're staying on. So I think that we should assume, based on what I've heard from Lee, that anything we're talking about with RVs, the proper wastewater treatment is already baked in.
Okay. Tina?
That's what I understand. I seem to be muted. I don't know.
Anyway.
Am I muted?
I can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with Elena. I think that that's very true, and that we've talked about this at length. If you are going to do any kind of permanent in residential areas for an RV, that would be definitely appropriate.
Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and open it up to the public. And so we're on B, should these RVs be connected to septic water and appropriate power? Does anyone have any comments?
I do. Peg?
Jen, go ahead. Go ahead. Okay. Just, yeah.
Okay, it's Jen Bach. So if it's assumed that RVs could be permanent dwellings, which I also don't agree with, I believe they would have to be connected to plumbing and water and everything, because you could have some interesting situations if you didn't.
Okay. Thank you. So I do want you to assume that we're having RVs. That's why we're asking this question, is because, you know, so yeah. No more comments from the public?
I do. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Sorry.
I answered yes to RVs as potential permanent housing. You asked it as a yes, no question. I would put some kind of limitations or restrictions on that, but I think for seasonal use, we're talking about the school ground as well and the potential of an RV spot there. I do think they need to be connected to a permanent wastewater system, but as Elaine and Tina and apparently Lee said, that is already part of the deal anyway. So I'm not just carte blanche RVs, permanent housing everywhere. I'm in for a little bit of some restriction to be further articulated.
Okay. I don't see any other hands up. So we're going to move on to C. If an RV is a permanent residence under current law, an ADU could be added that could also be an RV. Should this be considered or allowed? This is for the Planning Commission. We're back to the Planning Commission.
I think that they are asking that you said that you would take a vote. So they might not have a comment.
Oh,
they were waiting to vote yes or no.
Okay. I'm so, yeah. Like I said, we're doing this differently. Okay. So I guess the thing, yeah. So let's go back to the planning. Go back to the public, and how many of you are in favor of, say, yay for RVs being connected to a septic tank?
No, wait.
Okay, no, just
a minute. Is this yes, it will be connected if it's permanent housing?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, you guys have that?
Do you want me to have names?
No, you just, how many? You don't have to have names. Okay, and how many no?
Wait, were you asking the same question about septic tank?
Yes, she was.
Yeah, I'm, yes, me, yes.
Okay, so can I move on?
Can you get a verbal? Can we get a verbal on what exactly the yes, what the vote was, so that, because I'm not there to see.
5-3, 5 yes, 3 no. Is that what you said, okay. Heidi?
No, 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 no.
Oh, five yes, no no's.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. Okay. Okay, so I'm going to move on to three to C now. If an RV, and this is, if we allow RVs to be used as a permanent residence, if an RV is a permanent residence under current law, an ADU could be added that could also be an RV. Should this be considered? I'm going to ask the Planning Commission, commissioners, if you have any comment. So I think this is one of the challenges of designating RVs as permanent residence is this is required under state law that you can create an external accessory dwelling unit. And if we're calling RVs permanent residence, then yes, you could have another RV. So we could have two RVs on every lot if people chose to make them their permanent residence. So we can't say no to this. I mean, it's because allowed under state law. I think one of the reasons I think RVs shouldn't be designated as permanent residences. But thank you, Nancy.
So if it's infrequently used, I think it's fine. However, if it's an ADU that's used 24/7, 365, then I guess I'm not a big fan of the whole complete permanent use year in, year out. Seasonal use is totally different. People coming for the weekend or for 2 weeks is a completely different story. But I'm not a huge fan of use beyond, well, yeah. It's a temporary thing in general.
Okay.
Whether seasonal or during construction or what.
Yeah. Elena, do you have a comment?
Yeah, I just, again, I, as long as the wastewater is taken care of, I do not care if people live in RVs. So one on a lot, two on a lot, doesn't matter to me.
Okay, thanks. Tina, do you have a comment?
Yeah, it would, if we do allow permanent, I think that that is the situation that we would have, you know, an ADU, as a RV would be an option.
Okay, that sounds good. Hey, I'd like to hear from the public. Does anybody in the public have a comment?
Yes, I do. Peg? Can I speak?
Go ahead, Peg.
Yes, I think, wait a minute. Okay, I don't think there should be a plethora of ADUs. I think everyone is allowed an ADU. If they choose to have it be an RV, fine. Permanent structure, fine. One or the other.
Any other public comments?
So,
could you come to the? You have to state your name.
Tina will ask us to repeat what you said.
Hi, this is Jennifer. Hi, Tina. Jennifer. I guess I just want to clarify that what you're saying here is that it sounds like that you have, if an RV, if you qualified it as a permanent residence, and you also have this ADU thing, you can just keep adding RVs. No.
No.
You're saying that there's a limit to one RV or two. I didn't hear that. Sorry, I missed the beginning preamble, whatever you said.
No, but your question is very valid because it's valid. So you can have one ADU and you can have you would be able to have an RV because at that point you can have one of each. So there would be two.
But that's the
correct
limit. And
yes.
You're allowed one permanent structure ADU.
Yes.
Because an RV is also allowed to be in this definition, an ADU, you're sort of saying you can have one permanent ADU, which is like a stick building structure, and one RV, but it would be a maximum of.
But you could,
If you designate RVs as permanent residences, and you can put another permanent residence on the property that is an ADU,
right,
and it could be an RV.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So then you could have three RVs. Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
Because if you've got one, if you've got one that's your personal one and you travel with it and you don't live in it, it's not a permanent residence. Like all over town, right? You could have three RVs.
Well, and I apologize. I didn't
Well,
no, you're fine. Get to hear whatever. I guess and you don't have to do this. You can say, "Well, I'm sorry, this is not an appropriate time." And
so
when the first time I heard that, but my question, my just
yeah,
my
but the thing is I the thing what we're doing is because I'm going to tell you what we're doing basically. So we're going to run through all five of these items. We're going to go through ABC, and we're going to do the Planning Commission first, and then the public will get a second chance. And this. All we're trying to do is figure out how to craft some ordinances. If we're going to do this, we're just finding out what people want and what people don't want. And the public, we're trying to find out what the public wants too. And so we're doing this in a totally different way. We've never done it like this before. So
I guess, and I'm not here to be an obstructionist. I'm just here to say that I'm finding this a little bit, it's a difficult me to accept in this that it's a statement and you're supposed to just say yes or no without any discussion. I don't really know what the backstory is to some of this as to why, and that's why I'm saying I apologize if you covered that in the beginning. Just wait a second. So I just feel like, okay, so what is the thinking behind coming forward? Is this a problem that you saw that you wanted to have solved? And you don't have to answer this. I'm just like, this is why I'm like, how would anybody ever vote on something that's a sentence like that? Context or background or what is behind it. I'm willing to do that because here we are doing it, but it's like it's not ever the way I would choose to voice my opinion without really realizing what actually is happening behind the scene. But anyway,
thank you.
That's all.
Okay, so I'm gonna say this. So I'm gonna go over this again. The Boulder Planning Commission has been discussing changes to the use of RVs in town for months. The Planning Commission is interested in finding ways to increase available, attainable employee housing in Boulder. It has been discussing potential changes to Boulder's recreational vehicle ordinances and is interested in gaining input and feedback from the community. That's why we're here. That's what we're trying to do. Okay, so did I get the vote?
No.
So on C, should we?
If there's any.
Oh, is there any more public comments? Look, this is a new format for me, so thank you. I appreciate any help. So, okay.
I'll be very brief.
Thank you.
I have emphasized the importance of following definitions in state law.
Yeah.
You cannot make an RV a permanent dwelling because permanent dwelling is defined in state law. State law requires permanent dwellings to be built against by uniform building code. RVs are not built to uniform building code. This whole question is really absurd. You cannot be calling an RV a permanent dwelling. And I pointed out that there are tax implications and so forth. Boulder ordinances cannot override that. So it's really a meaningless discussion.
John, can I ask you a question? So if are they allowed at, so is there another word that we should be, and this is what we're trying to find out, is there another word that we should be using?
Okay, what Grand County suffered through over a year of meetings on this, so we might well learn from their experience. They use the term alternative dwelling. It's the alternative dwelling ordinance is what they used. And that definition included RVs, fifth wheels, travel trailers, tiny homes on wheels. But the main distinction is between something that is on wheels and can be moved and something that's on a permanent foundation, which is completely different. So, but the what I made in my first comment was that permanent is different than indefinite duration. That's really the key. Well, it depends how long the indefinite duration is, important distinction.
Okay.
If it can be moved on demand and it's on wheels, That's not, that's in a different regulatory category for tax purposes, for insurance purposes.
Yeah. Okay, so my paper says permanent dwelling. So every time I say permanent dwelling, it should be said, I should be using the word alternative dwelling, and I'll try to use that.
For now, I think we need to operate with what Lee sent us.
Okay, thank
and not,
you.
And not sway the definitions by public comments, though I think it's a good point to bring up to Lee. I think for now we need to use our working document and not be changing it.
And I, you know, this is a work meeting, and so I appreciate all this information. Okay, so now I'm going to take a vote, and I kind of want to see you guys vote. Oh, you don't want to vote?
I'm suggesting just skipping the votes. Fine. I mean, we're getting public comment and input, and I think the votes don't mean very much.
Okay, that sounds good. So we're going to go ahead and skip the votes. It'll give us more time for discussion. Thank you, Nancy. I appreciate that. Like I said, we've never done it like this before, so I'm going to move on to two. So change the amount of time RVs are allowed for living purposes during construction of a permanent dwelling. And I don't know that we have 153.156. I don't know if anybody.
Do you want it?
That's that single paragraph, right?
Do you want it?
I don't know if anybody... I don't know if we have a question, maybe we'll bring it up then. Okay, so so A is current period of conditional use is 1 year. Is this adequate? So this one can be two. I can do A and B on this together because if it's so, should allowed occupancy of an RV during construction be longer? And so how long? So actually I'm trying to figure out here. These are two very distinct questions. So so change the amount of time RVs are allowed for living purposes during construction of a permanent dwelling. Current period of conditional use is 1 year. Is this adequate? Does the Planning Commission have any comment on that?
Also probably should say on there that it can be renewed. So if you haven't finished your house in a year, you can come back to the town. I think it makes sense since most houses aren't built within a year, particularly if you're building them yourself, even if you're using a contractor, that we should change the time, that it should be 2 or 3 years. Again, you can renew it, but that just creates bureaucracy, having to come in and renew it after a year when you know it's going to take longer to build the house than a year. So I do think we should allow 2 or 3 years. I don't know what the right number is, but maybe we have a sense of how long does it take around here.
I definitely agree that 1 year is a very tight schedule in Boulder. Everything takes much longer. I think maybe a good solution is you're allowed to be in your RV as long as you have your active permit running plus 3 months beyond that or something like that. So if you let your permit last, then you gotta either go pay the money again, get your permit again, so it keeps your feet to the fire on building, and you can't string out a permit forever without actually making progress in the building. And that's, and the county has updated the system they use. So it used to be where you could skate by, it wouldn't get revoked, but now it automatically is revoked. If the computer sees you haven't had an inspection within 12 months, bingo, 12 months and a day, it's gone. And you have to pay the money again. So I think
okay, thank you. Elena or Tina?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting idea, attaching it to the building permit. I hadn't thought of that. I think that's an interesting idea. If for some reason we don't attach it, I would I would suggest we do 3 years. I think when Lee and I were talking about it, he was saying that in his experience, it tends to be like in Boulder, more like 2 years for a contractor project and like 3 to 5 for an owner builder. So we said maybe 3 is the right amount.
That's about it.
But yeah.
Thank you.
What's that?
Do it yourself for a little longer.
Oh, was that Lee?
No.
Oh, I don't know.
It's actually Katie. It's, oh, okay. I'm going to mute Katie just until she's...
Okay. Okay, thank you. Okay, so Tina, so right now, so I want Tina, if you have anything to say before we go to the public. Tina, do you have any comment?
I think it should be lengthened in time.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so we're going to open it up to the public. Current period of conditional use is 1 year. Is this adequate?
Katie has her hand up.
Yeah, that's okay. We see that Katie's got her hand up, and Dan is at the microphone. So he'll go first, and we'll take Katie next.
Okay. I like the idea of tying it to the permit, because I don't know what people's experience has been, but when we lived in Cedar City, we were down in Colorado City frequently for reasons, and they made an art form down there of not finishing some of the siding on the house. And I mean, for years.
Yes.
So I like the idea of tying it to something like the permit.
Yes.
But 1 year is not nearly it.
Thank you, Dan.
Yeah.
Katie?
Hi, everybody. I feel like it should be 1 year with the option to extend, you know, just like it can go along with the building permit. But I would not start off with a 3-year term. Let's do 1 year, and then you can get it extended. And but you should show, you should be showing some progress on the construction site. And because we have projects in this town that I have seen moving along for 25, 30 years, and they are still not done. So, I mean, we cannot look at the lengthiest scenario in town and start measuring from there. Let's start with 1 year with the option to have an extension. And I think that would give people incentive to kind of move along. Thank you.
Okay. Dave?
You know, I just listened to Katie's comments, which she basically mirrored my views. So I'd support what she said. Otherwise, I think some of this could go on in perpetuity. I don't think anyone wants to have building going on in perpetuity. So a 1 year initially with a reasonable way to extend it if they're making progress on their permanent abode.
Great. Thank you, Dave. Okay.
When you guys talk about this, if it's something that you say, no matter what the time is, so if you say a year, 2 years, 3 years, and then you use the word renewal afterwards, it would be nice to know when you're deciding that what that renewal looks like. So, you know, so say that you say you've been living it for 3 years and then there's a renewal. What does that renewal look like? The renewal looks like 1 year after that, another 2 years, another 3 years. So just as you're saying these things and then there's a conversation of renewal, then what does the renewal timeline look like also? So just as we...
Thank you. Mark?
I'm Mark Nelson again. Yeah, I agree with what's been said so far, but and I think you know, renewable, the 1 year I think is fine right now, but you know, a renewal can be, you know, applied for. But I just, it's just, it's what Jessica said there. The town needs a reasonable way to define what the improvements are, right? And So I'm all for the extension and the idea of showing reasonable improvements moving along. But you need to really define that, because if you don't, that's going to bring a lot of contention into the issue when the time for renewal comes up. And so that needs to be clearly defined in such a way that, you know, you can say this much, 25%, whatever. It has to be substantial, it has to be defined clearly.
Yeah.
So everybody's on the same page.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. Peg, it looks like, Peg, do you have your hand up?
Yes, I do.
Oh, yeah.
I would be in favor of extending, I mean, of having the period allotted to be more than a year. I'm not sure the time. I'd say up to 3 years. I'd be interested in hearing anecdotally from people who've had building projects over the past 3 or so years and just find out some sort of an average time that it actually took them. I'm sure there's some that beat the year period. There's some that maybe press more toward 5. I'd be interested in real information on how long some of these projects are actually really taking, and then base a number on that reality.
Thank you. So C is, we've already answered that. So I'm going to go back also to answer Peg's question. I think most of us that live here have seen the projects that have gone on even in the last 2 to 3 years. We actually have a construction company here in Boulder, and they've been working on several projects. I think that we've seen several of them done in a year. I think some of them have taken 2 years. And then I think, as everybody has said, there you have these random projects that haven't been finished. So to answer your question, Peg, I think there are 3 houses that have been built here in town in the last year and a half or 2 years that have been built in a year to a year and a half. And I really think it's because we had a construction company here in town, and I think that was really helpful to people. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead.
Can I just say something?
Oh, yes. Tina?
Sorry. I think we should also remind ourselves that this is, we're partially, mostly having this conversation because there is a need for housing, and yet the cost of housing with a construction company is totally different from a home or built,
owner builder
house. And so, in that respect, if somebody starts their house and they run out of money and it takes them a while to put it back together, are we going to say, well, that's not an option? You have, you know, it's just, it becomes, anyway, I think it's not consistent with what we've been talking about, but that's okay. I just had to make that comment.
I want to make it clear that there are all these different numbers, like somebody with a construction company can do it in a year. Somebody that's doing an owner builder probably is that 2 to 3 year person. And so So I appreciate everybody's comments, and we're going to go ahead and move on to 3. After we do 3, we're going to take a break. We've gotten all this done in quite an hour, and I appreciate everybody's input at this point.
Before you move on, can I just make a point?
Yes.
2 is not the same, only because you're talking about it as for people who, like, so yes, it's the same concept, you know, should it be hooked up to septic and water? And so this is a separate, so if the RV is for the purpose of living in while you're getting your, you know, your house built, then do you think it needs to be connected to septic, water, and appropriate power? Because maybe people have a different feeling compared to it being permanent or to when you're just
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe
so
no one does. I just wanted to.
Okay. So then I will. So for the purpose of for RVs allowed for living purposes during construction, such RVs need to be connected to septic, water, and appropriate power. Does anybody have a comment from the Planning Commission on that?
I think I advocate flexibility here. Likely going to get your power hooked up, but your septic field, it may take months to, you know, if you start in the fall, you may not get to it till spring. So I think flexibility is required just by the nature of the job being conducted.
Any other comments from the Planning Commission?
Daryl, I think that was a good comment.
Thank you, Tina. Does anybody else have any comments? No. So I'm going to go ahead and move to the public. So when it comes to living during construction of a permanent dwelling, do RVs need to be connected to septic, water, and appropriate power? Does anyone in the public have a comment?
I apologize for speaking too much tonight, but I will give it my own situation.
Is your mic on?
Yeah, mic.
Okay.
Because of some complications with Garkane and BLM easements, it took me over a year and a half to get power onto my property. I was doing construction with a portable generator because I couldn't get power. So, I mean, you know, I think that part is, so, and putting in the hookups itself is part of the initial construction. So where does somebody live while they're managing the installation of the power pole and the digging the septic trench and putting in the roads and so forth? So I think you have to have some flexibility there, provided that you focus on the municipal concern, which is sanitation. If they've got provision for sanitation, that's fine. If it's a self-contained RV, it should be fine.
So, John, appropriate power, is that the wording? I mean, because that isn't saying that you have to be connected to power, which we would assume would be Garkane. So if you had appropriate power, are you talking about being able to use a generator? Is that what you're saying?
I would say that we need to focus on the legitimate municipal concern. The biggest municipal concern is sanitation. It doesn't really hurt the town whether they're working off flashlight batteries, a generator, right, a solar panel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that. I was thinking that when I was...
Yeah.
I'd say be silent on it.
Okay.
It would be better.
Okay.
I mean, there's no reason to regulate something without a municipal, identified municipal concern.
Okay. Thank you, John.
Yeah, Lacey.
Lacey?
No.
You're on mute.
Sorry, really quick. Some builders prefer to put in the septic later. So, like, depending on where you're going to place your house and depending upon where your RV is situated, depending upon your lot size, depending on if you have a dry wash or not, like, you may or may not be able to connect to your septic depending on where your RV would be put. So, like, just something to consider, like, if you have to hook up your septic to your RV, that might not be a viable option if you're building a home and there's, like, a dry wash through it or you're close to certain trees. Just, so I'm not sure. Anyways, I just wanted you all to consider that.
Thank you, Lacey.
Thanks.
Katie?
Okay, I'm unmuted now. Okay, I mean, we can require that they have a porta potty on site. We do that up on the mesa. There's no construction happening without porta potties on site. And in regards to power, I think they can do without power. The problem that I can see without having power, not having an RV not hooked up to the power, is then there is potentially noise pollution, especially when you have one or two there and people are running generators night and day. That could be a problem with in a low density neighborhood. And yeah, that's that. Thanks.
Thank you, Katie. Dave, did you have a comment?
Oh, yeah, I did. I think everybody's already kind of hit the point. The real issue here is how do you deal with your black water, whether it's a porta potty, which is probably a reasonable solution in a lot of situations. And it's just John just said it really is a sanitation issue. So if a person cannot hook up to a permanent septic system, maybe there's got to be some compliance in some regard, either to have a porta potty or make sure that they're having their black water service so that they're not having those issues.
Thank you, Dave. So I heard today myself that when you get a building permit, you can go ahead and go on off, Mark. When you get a building permit anymore, the county, Jessica, would you say what it was? Go ahead.
No, I told you that I didn't know if they regulated it or not, but they still do. The construction companies are required to give it to for their employees. They have to have it on site. But when you're doing owner build, it's a little bit different. So pulling out a permit with a construction company has a porta potty, but when you do owner build, requirement of your.
So with owner builders, I think it actually is in the permit requirement. Whether it's enforced tightly, I don't know. It doesn't apply in my situation because we have a working toilet in the shop portion, technically you aren't supposed to have it.
Lacey just confirmed the same thing. She said it is through the Garfield County building permit. It is required to have a porta potty.
Yeah.
Mark?
Mark Nelson. So some of the things I had on my mind were already brought up. Katie talking about noise pollution is a very real thing, especially if it's going to drag on for 1, 2, or 3 years, you know, somebody running on a generator. So I think, you know, what John said about flexibility, I think, you know, troubles with like easements or something like that has to be kind of considered. And I suggest you do that like on the town when the building permit, have a checkoff so that if it has to be a real need, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It has to be a real need, like, you know, easements across government property or something that's real, not just because somebody wants to do it, wants to be on a generator instead of paying the, you know, the huge amount to hook up to power. I think they should be required to hook up power if they can, you know. If they can't, then maybe a check off and see what can be worked out with the owner and the builder to see how that can be worked out. And I mean, in some cases, noise might not be that big a problem. If it's like 10 acres, you know, somewhere in the upper bowl or somewhere, it might not be a problem. But like Kate pointed out, if it's in the subdivision or in a higher density area, that's, you're going to run into some complaints from neighbors, I would imagine. And then on the septic issue, it, you know, like, that's a checkoff from the county that's required by the health department. And I think, you know, allowing them, you know, using RV is going to be problematic because somebody's going to want to have to hook up their RV and haul it to a slang or whatever into a dump. And that's full. And then who's going to watch that? You know, who's going to enforce that? So I think the porta potty is the way to go because that's, you know, under construction situations, and we'll have to do it. And then that can actually be a motivation for them to quicker than the kind of like, you know, it's a hard enforcement issue. So the porta potty is a good idea because they come in. They come readily and check it and empty it. Doesn't leave it on the onus on them, on the self builder to do that or not do it, and then the town can't really follow it. So that has potential for being kind of a health issue there. We've got to go further. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Okay, so I'm going to go on to number 3. So it's eliminate the current limit of 180 day stay within a 365 day period in RV parks. Should this limitation be removed? So does anybody have a comment from the Planning Commission?
I do. So I think it makes sense to remove this because it actually would potentially provide an option for someone to live in an RV park for all year if they wanted to. I think the two RV parks we have in town, the one that Ray is building and the one that Gladys has, are both oriented towards short-term stays. That's sort of what they apply for in permitting. But wouldn't preclude somebody being able to park an RV there for a long period of time if they needed housing. So I think I would like to see us remove this 180-day limit, leave it at the discretion of the park owner. They may not want to have long-term rentals, but that option could exist.
I'm also, the 180 days seems somewhat arbitrary, and so I'm okay with more flexibility there, especially given the fact that any changes here, I think, has a larger impact on the community that we think of multiple families, like half of the school, either school kids are for families that either lived in an RV for a while or are currently living in an RV as they're building, or previously had some creative solution as they were building. So I don't know. I think it does have a big effect on the town if we come down really heavy-handed on this, that we may see our school drop in half by population.
Tina, do you have a comment?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think we shouldn't be regulating that in lieu of our need for housing.
Thank you.
Yeah, I agree.
I haven't really commented too much, Nancy. I'm so busy running the meeting, I haven't made any comments. But I do have a comment. When I've driven down to Boulder City, Nevada 3 times since December, and I've watched all the RV parks close up, and it is their discretion. There isn't anybody living in them. And so I think it's kind of a natural thing as far as RVs, that the people that own the RVs, I mean, if you look at any of the RV parks, there isn't anybody there. And they close up just because there is no business. And so I'm not sure what's going to happen with Ray as far as people living there long term. But from the RP, because I really started looking, I don't see people in them. And it is because it's hard to live in an RV during the wintertime because of the nature of how it's built as far as a recreational vehicle. Okay, so public comment. Should the limitation be removed? Because right now it's at 180 days stay in RV parks. Does anyone else? Did Tina already comment?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so is there anybody in the public? So can I?
I will.
Okay. Now's your chance.
I think that's like the best solution we have at the moment for this. Like, and I think that the natural cycle of living in an RV park, and like you said, the owners having the discretion, hopefully they would use discretion and apply it. And as I mentioned at our last meeting, there are pros and cons. You know, if somebody is living there long term, they start to acquire satellite belongings, but that's the owner's discretion, I think. So I think that eliminating the limit would be a good viable solution for what we have.
Thank you. Can I move on?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so B is, should there be any limit, or should the RV park owner have discretion on length of stay? Okay, so that's kind of redundant, right? Okay, so let's just go ahead and go on. I want to wait a little bit longer before we have a break, if we have one. So we have number 4, allow RVs to be used as employee housing on parcels or lots supporting commercial uses. So this one has A through E. So the first one is, current definitions of ADU commercial allows a unit to be built to house employees or owners of commercial businesses on site.
That's not a, really a question. Okay, so B, thank you, Nancy. She wrote this. Okay, so B is, could this ADU commercial be an RV? Does anybody in the Planning Commission have a comment? So I, as an interim measure, until we can figure out better ways to construct employee housing, I would support the idea of allowing businesses in Boulder to temporarily or seasonally use an RV to house an employee. And I think doing it on their property, I mean, ideally they do it on their property. I wouldn't support, and this is where the language gets complicated, somehow calling it an ADU commercial implies some permanence to it that I prefer not to attach to it. I mean, I think that's, it implies that it's a permanent dwelling. I'd like them to be defined as temporary employee housing or perhaps long-term employee housing. I mean, it can be for a season, and the seasons vary whether you're at the school or at the lodge. But they'd be used with the intent of hopefully moving towards something more permanent in the future. But in the interim, where we are right now and the challenges we have with housing and trying to retain employees and have good teachers, I would support having RVs as housing and commercial properties, including, and I include the school in that.
Thank you, Nancy.
I guess as a quick clarification, when it says ADU commercial, does that mean it's on a property designated residential property?
So in Boulder, I don't know if you know this, in Boulder, we only have how many commercial properties? Probably a dozen that are considered commercial. So there is no other commercial in town. You have to get a conditional use permit. So it would be on those commercial properties, like we can almost name them, Hills and Hollows, Halls, the Lodge, even Annie's. So that's just a sampling of the businesses. A business would also be in the school. We're looking at it at the school also. The park has looked at that too, to have a RV pads on the national park. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, I guess. So I'm wondering, like, for the lodge, is it six RVs down in Lower Boulder or six RVs tucked behind the lodge?
Tucked behind the lodge.
This is five and about.
That's the next.
Okay. So
it is commercial. It is for it to be right. I mean, so if you did that, it would be on the commercial property. That RV would be on the commercial property.
I think that I'm in favor of actually quite a bit of flexibility here, because commercial property means the purpose of that is that I make money. So if it looks like trash, I'm not going to make money. So I think people will invest to make it look nice, and they'll make it work because they need the employees, but they also need the customers.
Okay, thank you.
Can I also just ask really fast, what was it part of the thing of the school is that it's not commercial?
It's institutional.
So just making sure that, like, in that wording, the school is not, like, so under this definition, the school is not considered.
No, I shouldn't have used that as an example. Well, I think it should say commercial institutional uses.
Yeah, because I want to make sure.
Okay. Yeah.
So maybe just.
That's a good point, Jess. Thank you.
Yeah.
The school is commercial by definition.
Yeah. Oh, it is. Okay.
Thank you, Lee. Thank
we you. Simplified things in Boulder down to where everything that's not residential is commercial. There are two choices.
Thank you.
School is commercial.
Thank you. Very true. Okay, do any of the planning commissioners have a comment on 4B?
I think it's the best option, too.
Okay. Thank you, Tina. So I'm going to open that up to the public. 4B. Yeah, anytime.
Yes. Not all the way up to say yes.
Oh, okay. So, but we have to have, so we just have to have your comment on the record. Okay, so, you were fine.
Says yes.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Jen. Okay, I don't see anybody. Okay, so we're going to move on to C. Can the RV be approved?
Dave's on.
Sorry, I didn't see Dave. Oh,
I just came on really quickly. First of all, obviously, I have a lot of interest, as well as Susan, regarding this issue. And we sent a letter to the Planning Commission that you probably read or will read. The real issue here in our context is it's just not the convenience of having the ability to have housing on site for a temporary or seasonal employee. But in our case, it's actually cost us revenue dollars over over many, many years, because trying to find cleaning staff, housekeeping staff, is a challenge in itself. But when you don't have a place to house them, it subjects your current or existing staff to some really grueling hours, even to the point sometimes in the summer that we had to put out a no vacancy sign when we still had a number of rooms that we would have loved to rent, but we couldn't because we couldn't get them cleaned. Everybody was just exhausted. And I mean, when I'm talking exhausted, some of these people are working literally 14-hour days. So from our perspective, it's more than just, like I said, a convenience. It really is taking revenue out of our pockets.
Thank you, Dave. That's a good point. Thank you. Okay, so I'm going to go back to C. Can the RV be a permanent dwelling on the commercial property, or should it be seasonal and be subject to other limits? The Planning Commission? So I've expressed my opinion on this several times. I think an RV is a temporary dwelling. Could it be year-round if the need exists? So I don't support it being permanent. I support it being useful to the business. I mean, I'm trying to figure out how to support the businesses without getting into declaring RVs as permanent dwellings, I guess, is this a fine line to walk here. So that's my opinion.
Is that when we use the alternative dwelling definition?
Yeah, it could be alternative dwelling.
Exactly.
I'm catching on.
Yeah, I don't want to call RVs permanent. That's, yeah, I guess, sort of the bottom line, because I don't think they're designed for that. We have to change our definition and then what an RV is, and then we conflict with the state definition of RV and every other definition of RV, because they all say temporary.
Yeah. So, I mean, thank you, Nancy. Daryl?
So I think people who, there's a concern that, well, an RV, permanent RV will be an eyesore. And that, I understand that concern. I think that concern almost goes away when we're talking about commercial properties, because market forces solve that problem. If it is an eyesore, people are not going to come to your lodge or your whatever it is. Right? So you have to keep it nice. I think here I'm a fan of greater flexibility on exactly how the business needs to use it, whether they need someone for just the typical season or for an atypical season, or maybe they need someone there year round for other purposes. I don't know. I'm a fan of greater flexibility here.
Can I respond to Daryl? Because it's not just about how it looks, but RVs aren't designed to be, permanent housing. And as I think John has pointed out, they're taxed differently. There's different code that covers them. So I just think we want to avoid getting into the situation of saying, RVs, they're there, they can be there forever. I mean, I'd like our
commercial businesses to have ways to house employees, but be working towards, you know, is there something better we could do to house employees? So that's more what I'm trying to say. It's not just that they might look, I think there's some beautiful RVs out there. So I have a comment on that too, Dave. And Daryl, you kind of reflect on this. So if there's no business, you limit your staff in the wintertime. Susan's is here. I'm kind of looking at her. So they do limit their staff. It's cut down drastically. And so I would assume that you know, probably that RV wouldn't be used in the wintertime. If you want, I'm trying to help you not, but that's okay. Yeah, so if you want to comment on that, and I'm doing this really so that we can kind of find out how maybe a business would use an RV for their purposes.
Okay, Susan Heaton, I'm operations manager at Boulder Mountain Lodge. We basically need more help between April and the end of October.
Yep.
So the first of April to the end of October. You know, we get by in June, July, and August because sometimes we can get kids to help us that are out of school for the summer. But April, May, and September and October kill our employees. It's really hard to get things done. Last year, we had 3 people doing housekeeping, trying to do 22 rooms every day and then stay and do laundry. It's just really hard. So if we could get even, you know, 1 or 2 additional people, it would help a lot.
Yeah, thank you, Susan.
But yeah, during the winter, most of those seasonal people would go away. So,
yeah. Well, and I think I worked as a CEO. I myself worked at the lodge for over 20 years. And the season was a good season. It's 8 months, actually. I think Dave can and Susan can. It's almost an 8-month season. It's going back. It stopped being 8-month season during COVID. But it has gone back to an 8-month working season, which is March, the middle of March. You want to get your employees here a little bit early. And then it generally stops when those magic gates close October 31st and nobody's here any longer, you know. And so our businesses, everybody leaves town who is a seasonal employee. Not everybody, to be careful. 90%, 99% of the people do leave. So, yeah. Yeah, that's that seasonal thing.
And I just want to bring up too, so when you think about seasonal, I'm going to bring it back to the elementary school, that still can be considered season, but you're talking about the exact opposite. So like if you haven't said that, but if you're talking about like people not living in the winter, then you're cutting that off. And to make sure that, you know, looking at a teacher, it is seasonal kind of, but if you put them in an RV and then you're like, hey, you have to find somewhere to live for the summer, it's kind of the same thing as winter, is that you may lose that person because they have nowhere to live for 3 months. And then they don't, yes, they have the ability to come back, but if they lose that housing for that 3 months, and that means they go in and find a different job and they don't come back, what does that also look like for the business and especially for the school? You know, so you find a teacher, you put them in an RV, they're okay with it, but then you tell them they have to move those 3 months. And so just kind of what does that look like as we talk about that? I know, and I feel it's hard because the school, I feel like, is different than the businesses, you know. And
that's a good point.
So I just want to, you know.
Yeah.
And okay. I have one more thing.
Okay.
When you guys talk about this, it would also be great, how many? Kind of my question is, so how many? So when you talk about this, so the businesses, the school, whoever, is it 1? Is it 2? Is it 6? Is it unlimited? Is it like per acre? Like, you know, if you have 10 acres, can you have 1? If you have, you know, 20, what does it look like that you're going to, how many?
Yeah,
and
that's
how
a good
decide
point.
How to define that part.
Yep. Okay. Thank you. Let's see. Do we have any more comments? Does Dave? Dave, do you have your hand up again?
Yeah, I do. First of all, okay. I think Jessica's made some excellent comments in trying to effectively make this work. You know, temporary seasons shift depending on, you know, who needs them and what they're doing. In our case, you know, it's pretty much the you know, the warmer months, and in the winter we can shut things down. But one of the questions I have is, let's say we have something set up. for a temporary employee, seasonal employee, call it what you will. And then let's say in end of October, that person is now gone. Okay. I don't necessarily want to keep the, you know, RV or trailer set up, but what I would like to do is still be able to store it on our property. In other words, I have no problem shutting it down and even moving it, but I don't want to feel like I have to move it off property if nobody's living in it. That's one thought to have. The second one that I just said in this conversation, back to what kind of density, obviously from our perspective, the last thing we want to do is look like a shanty town with a bunch of, you know, trailers and RVs around for, you know, temporary housing. But I do think there has to be some kind of reasonable allocation of how, you know, how many of these RVs or trailers can you have on site? In other words, for someone that had a small commercial operation, all of a sudden they decided to have, you know, several RVs on site for employees or however they would try to justify it. That doesn't make sense. On the other side, I think you've got to look at each individual business and what their needs are. So I think that's a conversation that's going to have to carry on with the planning commission. But I definitely think there has to be some kind of, you know, basically restrictions or guidance there so people don't get carried away. And again, in our case, I'd be happy to have, you know, one trailer, which we already have stored on site, to be able to utilize that. That would take most of the pressure off of us. So I'm just making that as a kind of our own individual comment here.
Thank you, Dave.
You might want to circle. I spoke, which then got you off track for Dave, but Tina and Elena, I want to revisit.
Okay, Tina or Elena, do you either one of you have comments before we move on?
I have a comment kind of, related to what Dave was just saying, which is kind of going back to what Nancy brought out at the beginning, which is these Grand County alternative dwelling overlays. They basically piloted a program where they had these properties where you could basically people could have four alternative dwellings. And maybe that something like that would be a good idea where it's like, you know, maybe, I don't know, the museum or something has one of these and there's four alternative dwellings and maybe they only need one for the museum. And then someone who works for Dave could live in another, someone at the school could live in another, you know? And so they're kind of being clustered. So it could be like this good middle ground of like, it's not a giant RV park and you don't have to go through all the restrictions of having an RV park, which would be expensive, but it also isn't, you know, an RV or two on every lot. They're sort of consolidated in the commercial district of town, maybe, or wherever they are. They could be kind of like clusters. We could have standards around it. And then, you know, so something we've talked about in Boulder is we do need housing, but there's not that many of us. We don't need a ton of housing. So we just have to think creatively. And I think that could be a good path to go down.
Thank you, Elena. Nancy?
Yeah, I just want to reinforce what Elena just said, and I mentioned it earlier that these, what did they call them, camp parks, long-term camp parks, as part of a special purpose overlay district. So it wasn't that they went in and changed the zoning, they created an overlay district so that this could happen in various neighborhoods that were subject to constraints. I mean, does it fit into the neighborhood? Does it fit into the environment where it is? But it would be at least four units, and it would be totally oriented towards long-term residences, no short-term rentals allowed, with fewer requirements for an employee, and oriented towards employees and locals and long-term alternative housing. So it would be something between a step beneath, I don't mean that in a negative way, what, you know, Ray and Gladys have, which are, you know, higher end requirements for putting those in place. When, to answer your question, Dave, when I thought about this, for me, it was, well, one unit on a commercial property. If you start getting more than that, then you're running into it being an RV park. And so I don't think that's what we're talking about trying to promulgate. We really just want to try to relieve some of the stress for not providing employee housing. But I do think, you know, taking a look at what, if the Planning Commission at a future meeting can take a look at what Grand County did, it was a year-long pilot, which I think in what they determined after it ended last year is it wasn't long enough for anybody to actually build something. So I think it's something for us to think about. We could think about a pilot that would look at something like that and identify some parcels or areas in town where something like that could be located. And a teacher could live there, an employee at the lodge could live there. I mean, it would, you know, provide housing. It just wouldn't necessarily be on the commercial site.
Thank you, Nancy.
Not to dive into this, do you know if that land was owned by Grand County or if it's private? Maybe if
no, it's a developer could come along and say, I've got a piece of property.
Okay.
So you don't know what, do you, John? Do you know where the
it's developer private.
Make a proposal, and so it's not this. It's private. Oh, it's private. Okay, it's not on the right. Okay, thank you. I was just wondering this. Okay, so we're going to go on to 4B. Should ADU commercial be changed to employee housing? Colleen, I might suggest that rather than having the public weigh in on this, because I think this is a little geeky in terms of, you know, what's the definition of an ADU.
Okay.
Our code, and as Lee said, I mean, we have residential and we have commercial.
Yeah.
So we use this term. For me, it's complicating because an ADU implies a certain kind of sort of permanent residence on a property, and then we're back to talking about RVs as ADUs. So I think this should just be something we work out in conversations with Lee rather than asking the public to try to determine what we're talking about here.
Okay. Okay, that sounds good. And so we're still allow RVs to be used as employee housing. And so that's that we're on number four, now we're on E. So do such RVs require septic water and appropriate power connections?
I don't know. And again,
okay, because that's fine.
If this is on commercial property,
right?
If it reeks and it looks horrible,
yeah,
you're not going to have anybody come in there. So
yeah,
we assume you can figure that problem out.
Okay,
whether you have a communal like bathhouse with a functioning toilet and everything, and then that way no one has to stink up their RVs, then that's go for it.
Is that kind of a consensus through the Planning Commission? What Daryl just said. Because we can move on.
I'd like to see, I guess, would encourage water and power. The septic, you know, if there's they want a porta potty behind their RV, I don't think that's going to look great. But, you know, I think, honestly, I think most commercial businesses would want to connect to septic water and power. So I don't, you know.
I'm not quite sure where I land on this one for right now. In some ways I can see that. In some ways I think these things should just be fairly applied across the board. You know, like if someone else has another external bathhouse or something, why can't they use it instead of having to be connected? I think we should pick one and apply it to all probably, but it's new to me. I need to think about it a little more.
Thank you, Elena. Tina, do you have anything? Does anyone in the public? Dave? And then Mark or Jen, you can. Dave, go ahead. You can get rid of Jen.
We're in a little better situation than probably most of the commercial properties in that we already have a septic tank that's a system that's commercially approved. And, you know, we're right now under capacity for what it's been approved for, as well as, you know, being able to hook up water, power, and such. The only concern I have is, first of all, I'm not sure where we would place this trailer. I'm not sure how we would place it on our property. It's back to, again, trying to be as discreet or out of the way as possible. But once we had a place that we set up, It would be difficult to do that this year because it takes time and you have to do a lot of this work in the you know, warmer months and such. But we would be able to hook that up to a septic system if we were going to, you know, do a situation where you wanted to have they didn't have to deal with black water. It went into the septic system. The other side of it, at least from our standpoint, is we have access to, showers and toilets and all that in the main building at the lodge. So those could be available, for those type of usages. But I think the thing that I just want to make a point at right now is that if we were going to hook it up to a permanent septic connection, we'd want to at least have some time over the next year to figure out where that was and to accomplish that, because we'd have to use a backhoe and all that kind of stuff. So just a thought to share with everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Jen?
I think kind of expanding on that, something that makes this unique is that the commercial operation would maybe have access to water and toilets and things that the employees could use. I'm not sure how that would work out security-wise, but if there is some sort of wording in the specific section that, you know, adequate facilities or hookups or something has to be provided, but then that can be more flexible maybe than somewhere else because the business may or may not, I mean, may have access to that, may have hookups already, may have a communal place. So like John says, you want to make sure that the municipal concern is addressed. There are multiple ways to address it in this situation.
Thank you, Jen. It's 7:30. Should we take a break? Anybody, do you want to go on? Okay. Yep. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and move on. And so number five, allow RVs to be used as employee housing on lots not supporting a commercial use, but owned by the business owner elsewhere in Boulder. I have to look at this myself. Should this be allowed? I'm going to comment on this because I've made a whole lot of comments basically, but I think the thing with this would be the thing that we've talked about as far as the ADU and the RVs together on a private property, I know several business owners here in town do live here. They have property. I think I would consider that with all the conditions that we've been talking about tonight, that it might be an option.
For me, I guess I would rather see us explore, the alternative housing, long-term camp parks, than doing this, because this to me opens a can of worms business owner owns a piece of property and then they have an ADU on it and then they decide they're going to put a RV for employee housing. And it just seems like it sort of proliferates. I don't know. I'm not comfortable with it, and I can't
put my fingers on why.
But I like the idea of, dedicated long-term parks where we might try to accommodate the need for employee housing if it can't be accommodated on the commercial property.
Yeah. Okay.
So I do think that this can become a can of worms. The reality that some of the commercial, the commercial zones are minuscule, like halls. Where would they put somebody? So this might be actually. So I think, yeah, you would have to add some conditions to you don't anger every single one of your neighbors, right? So yeah. Maybe the condition is, well, the place with the RVs has to be some small fraction of the total land. So if you're on 1 acre, you're really constrained. But if you've got 30, 40 acres, then you've got a place where you can tuck it away and it's not going to be an eyesore for everybody. So whether it's, I think that I'm okay with this, but with some conditions.
Thank you. No, good point. Thank you. Tina or Elena, do you have any comments on this? On five?
This is Elena. Yeah, I think it's a good idea, I have to say, to let people do it on a different property, because I can think, I don't know, I never like to call out specific people, but I can think of a few examples where it would make sense in town, where the business owner's property that they own is bigger or maybe more secluded than the property, than the commercial property. Like, I don't know, even just, yeah, two examples I feel like could be like Hills and Hollows and the food truck. Like, both the people who own Hills and Hollows own something down in Lower Boulder, a lot of land. Lacey has a spot up in the subdivision, which is a little more tucked away. And if they wanted to have someone up there, I think that that would be a great option for them. And then, you know, thinking of like Magnolias is gone, but like Museum and Magnolias, same thing there. Like, there's limited space, but, if someone had another place, I don't know. I think we should give options. And I kind of agree with what, Nancy says, that in a perfect world, it would be nice to just have some of these like dwelling unit, little mini campground kind of things. But I think that we need to be careful sometimes not to, I feel like sometimes we have these conversations as if we live in a perfect world, where people can afford things, and also where, you know, we pass a rule to allow that and someone does it. We could pass something to allow one of those mini campgrounds and no one does one for 5 years, yet one of the employers could house someone on their land but can't. So I think more options is better.
Thank you, Elena.
I would say that, you know, basically, again, not using permanent, but actually using more of a temporary situation. I mean, anybody in any endeavor in town who needs some help doing what they're doing as a business of some sort, would benefit by being able to make sure that they could house somebody who would help them out with that. So I guess it gets back to that point. We do have agricultural employee housing is an option in our ordinances. So that is, you know, that's already there for that kind of thing. But again, if we're talking about housing.
Pauline, can I make one more comment?
You bet.
This is sort of less specific to this one and sort of about all the things we've been talking about, but it keeps coming up. I think that I would encourage us as a commission and the public too, frankly, but us as a commission to be careful when we're talking about these things. I've heard things, yeah, trashy, trash, eyesore, things like that tonight. And I think we should be careful. We're having this conversation because we've got this whole population of people in Boulder who are working here and are growing our food and serving our food and making this town run. And they're struggling to figure out how to live here. And I think we should be careful not to make an option that seems legitimate to someone out to be trashy. I just think we should be careful what we say about this stuff personally.
Tina, did you have something?
I just wanted to say the same thing that I did with the other one, and it's how many.
Yeah.
So as you talk about that, to really say how many RVs, no matter what that is, that if you're just going to make it a blatant, like, you can have one, you can have two, or if it's per acre or whatever, but to really define that too, is as you make these, just that it's across the board,
yeah,
something that's defined.
Okay. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and turn it over to the public. And Katie, go ahead, Katie.
Thank you. This is Katie. I want to latch on to the word careful. We want to be really careful with this because very often a business is owned by a legal entity. So it's not owned by Katie, but it's owned by Katie's LLC. Okay. But that puts a private property probably that's owned by me too under a different ownership than the LLC. So we there's a whole legal aspect to this one, and we want to be super careful with what we allow or not. What we need to look at is the facts. Let's not look at ownership. Let's look at where these properties are located. Are they commercial properties? Are they not commercial properties? And that's what should be ruling what's allowed and what's not. And that's my two cents worth. Thanks.
Thank you, Katie. Dave? And then I'll have you. Is that him? No.
Yeah, no, that was me to whatever I was doing. You know, we're kind of a textbook example for that. I mean, you know, we have a house, and you're going back to initially to Katie's comments, everything's owned in LLCs or C corps or whatever, but there's a way to put that under controlled persons or management or same management. I mean, there's a lot of ways legally to handle that. That's not that big of an issue. It just needs to be addressed. But in the case where we are, yeah, I have a house that's, you know, under an acre. The house is primarily on the west side of the lot, and is there a room there to actually put a trailer that could be utilized? I mean, I have one there now for storage. No one lives in it, just there for storage. But that is an interesting, you know, situation. I'm going back to Jessica's comment. At least in our case, I would have no desire to have a trailer there that would be used other than for temporary housing, you know, seasonal housing, call it what you will. But that could be of use. I mean, I'm thinking through in our own situation from the lodge perspective. This is a situation where, you know, does it look better on lodge grounds, or would it be better for me to move it over on a private residence, again, with the right restrictions, and not have to put it on the lodge ground itself, and it still would meet the objectives of being able to house a temporary employee? So I don't know. I mean, I don't have a lot of hard views on this, but I do think it's something that would be interesting to discuss and see if it makes sense. I mean, it has to make sense for the community and the zoning and all that as well, but it could be a conversation that would be helpful.
Thank you, Dave. Dan?
I just want to reinforce what Elena said about not just the Planning Commission being careful, but all of us being careful about talking about what looks trashy. Drive down any street in town, and there's a lot of trashy stuff from anybody's perspective, but it changes depending upon who you are and what you're doing. I just think we need to be very cautious about that. Plus, there's built-in biases and prejudices about trailers and RVs. I think we need to, that just needs to be out there. We need to be careful about how we describe what people's living situations look like. Just drive down the road.
Thank you.
Yeah,
just go ahead. Go ahead, Mark. And Heidi. Here. I got one right here.
Howdy. Martin Nelson. On Dan's comments, I think in general that's true. Also, we have to be realistic, right? It's got to be realistic about things. I like, you know, I guess really while I'm up here, what Katie said, I kind of agree with that. Definitely what Nancy Tosa said, I agree with. And I guess my biggest comment is, and I can't remember who said this, is that you're going to have to be really, really careful there. I think this particular issue, out of all these issues, is going to be the trickiest, because I haven't heard anybody talk about density or the fact that if somebody has property in a residential zone, they can like throw in an employee trailer park. I think this is, you know, it's going to be tough, but I don't think it's impossible. I think you can, but I'm just saying, take your time on this one.
John Brath again. Just picking up on Dan's comment, you know, sometimes one person's trash is another's treasure. You've seen that probably at a lot of antique stores. I think that's true of a town like Boulder, that sometimes the casual things that happen here are part of our custom and culture and the character of the town, that this isn't a squeaky, clean, high-end subdivision like you see going up around St. George. But what I really wanted to focus on in terms of picking up on this idea of the employee-focused RV or alternative housing parks, let's call them, is we have some very good models for in Boulder for what to do. One is what we did with RSTRs, and the other one is our RV park ordinance itself that Maria is building under. And that we've used this, the conditional use process. We have some numerical caps on size and so forth, which are just marks issued here about density. We've come up with performance standards, which would address things like, is it in the proper location? Is it visible? Does it have adequate access to streets? And, you know, is there reasonable infrastructure? So I think this would be the model that you could go forward on, is to think about developing a process for local worker or alternative housing that utilizes the same sort of CUP structure and performance checklist that we used to decide on to authorize RSTRs. Real quick comments, there were some questions about the Grand County pilot program. It was a one-year pilot program that had a numerical cap on how many units could be approved. I talked to some people in Grand County earlier this week. There were about six projects approved. They hit about half of the numerical cap. None have been built yet because these things, just like houses, take time to hit. The biggest issues tended to be financing and getting access to the highway, since a lot of these, they had encouraged them to be built along Highway 191. Very much like we say now with commercial activities having access to Highway 12. So all of a sudden that becomes an issue. But the bottom line question I asked the person who was the chair of the Grand County Planning Commission, an old hiking friend of mine, I said, after a year, do you have any regrets about passing the ordinance? And he said, no. The pilot program so far is working.
Thank you, John.
As somebody that's, Heidi Sola, as one of the seasonal employees in town that, thankfully, I have permanent residency and house to live in, but I think it was Dave that said, you know, the employees that do work during these seasons, not getting other employees in is really exhausting. You get worked to the bone, and I would just like the commission to really consider this issue and find a resolution to get housing more available to seasonal people. And also another thing to consider is if there are seasonal people that have their own RVs, if they could put them on whose property, where that would go. So, because I know that there are people that have their own RVs, it's how they live seasonally and they travel with it. And then, you know, if they come and they don't have a place to put it, it kind of defeats the purpose of that conversation at all. But mostly to Dave's point, everybody wants to be able to go out to eat and have all this stuff to do in the summer. But if there's not anybody to work at these places and do these things, then there's not that option. So I just think the employee aspect is very important to consider, especially in Boulder right now.
So I have to make this comment. Basically, I want it to be clear that no one here at these meetings have talked about anyone being trashy or using that example. When you use that word, it puts something into your mind, and so I know that it is a word. There's nothing trashy in our town, I don't think. And that word was not used for anything personal. And I just want to make that clear. So I also want to say that we're at the end, and I'd like to take a break, because what we're going to do now as a planning commission is try to... I want to just move forward with the information that we've gathered. So we're going to take a 5-minute break, and then we will come back. Thank you.
Putting you back on.
Okay. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and open the meeting back up. And going to, as a planning commission, talk a little bit about what we talked about, maybe if anybody has any comments. We also so I think what I want to do is attempt to find out where we're going to go from now, and so I'm going to let everybody have a comment. And then Lee, I would like to know from Lee, after we have all these comments, if there's anything else after that. So if anybody on the Planning Commission has a comment, this information will be compiled, and I think it needs to go to our real meeting on March 14th. So does anyone have any comments?
Pauline, if I can start, I want to just say too, I have my phone battery is almost dead and I don't have a charger with me. So when I go, I'm gone, and I'll try to listen to the rest when the recording's up. So if you don't mind if I go first.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. Why don't you just go ahead and go first, Alina?
Okay, thank you. Yeah, first of all, I'm really grateful that people came tonight and made comments, and that some people sent them in. It's really helpful. I'm glad that we've seemed to have some progress on like the RV park thing and the employee housing thing. I'm glad those have support. The only other comment or concern that I have as a planning commissioner is I think that both of those options are the options that kind of leave people's fate in someone else's hands a little bit, meaning like, you know, you can have housing if your employer gives you housing, or you have housing if the RV park extends its stay and wants you to be there. And then just in terms of the owner builder thing, I can see people thinking that it's safer for someone to be potentially at an RV park while they're building their house, but I just want to point out that that's, you know, it's not free to stay at an RV park. So that's, if the concern is people staying in RVs for longer, it's more expensive to stay at an RV park. That's money that could be going towards building your house. So I personally like to see more things pass that are kind of do it yourself, people able to do it without the outside help that way. But, that's it for me. I feel like this meeting's gone well, and I appreciate you running it and all that.
Thank you, Elena. So if we see you disappear, we'll know why.
Yeah, it'll be soon. Sorry.
Does anyone else on the Planning Commission have a comment?
I'd like to say I think this was a reasonable discussion. I was happy to see the folks show up who did, and both online and face-to-face here. And I think we've gotten some good input. There's still... a lot of discussion, I think. And what I'd like to see the Planning Commission do is take the notes that Heidi's putting together and whatever notes each of us individually have, and sort of look at those and see if we can digest what we think the consensus, maybe the right word, but the majority or the direction that we should be going on each of these questions, and then have a discussion about that at our March 14th meeting and see if we can come up with some direction that we might think about in terms of drafting an ordinance or ordinance changes. I have tried to go through my notes and say, okay, there's support here, but concerns here. And I think as a planning commission, we need to try to go through that in a logical way and then figure out what the ordinance changes are that we need to make. I think there are some changes we need to make. I heard that. I heard support for some of those. So that would be my suggestion, that we take some time to read the notes or review the recording, however you best absorb the information.
I really appreciate, I think some things we've found a lot of consensus on, other things are more sticky issues. I do want to reiterate that it's, Boulder is not an easy town. Every time I leave town, it takes me twice as long and costs twice as much money as I expect. And I can't tell you how many times I've had the wrong bolt and I've considered, well, what do I do? Do I waste a day driving over the mountain? And those are legitimate concerns when you're, especially if it's an owner builder solution. And I can't even imagine how this would take me even more time if I had young kids in the house. So making sure that our community is thriving and that families are supported, I think is a very important thing to keep in mind as we change these rules, because it's not an easy place to scratch out a line. Some people have that problem. Other people, it's a problem every month. And we need to remember that. So I do think that keeping that in mind and having being flexible is very important, because we live at the edge of the earth. This is not an easy place to live. So
thank you, Darren. Thank you. Tina, do you have anything to comment?
Well, I was hoping we could get some kind of broad direction here for our next meeting. And I think, there's been a great number of comments, and I really appreciate the broad variety of community members who made the effort to be at this meeting. I guess it would be nice if we could just broadly share maybe where we feel we're going to go at our next meeting, so we're not broadsided by any of this. Not that we're having back and forth conversations, but just to give us, an idea of what individually we're actually thinking that our motions should be, to what we want to have come forward at this next meeting, just so we're aware. That's just an option. I don't know how well that would work, but it would be, I think it would bring us to the meeting with some clarity for ourselves as how, in what direction we would budge what we feel with what other people are feeling, and how we can come to some kind of consensus moving forward. It's a difficult thing, and we're kind of at a point where we need to make some decisions. And so I hope that this next meeting that we have is really poignant on that end. I have a feeling we also have a subdivision. We might have other business at that meeting, but so it would be nice if we were really prepared to have this conversation.
Okay. So Nancy, we do want to go forward a little bit as far as
I think what we could do is go through each number again. We also, Nancy made a comment as far as having Heidi collect this information and Jessica as the clerk, we'll go through it and decipher it down a little bit. Then maybe they can put a little bit more onto it so that we would have that information presented at the March meeting. Do you want to do that right now? Because we can spend some more time and go ahead, Nancy.
Well, I was just going to say, I think there's three of the five questions that we basically had agreement on. The first one about permanent housing is probably the most contentious. And from what I heard, the majority said that RVs should not be permanent on any residential lot. I mean, I think I heard that. And, according to various definitions, RVs shouldn't be permanent. But that's one that I think we still need to have some discussion on. The second one, RVs, living in RVs during construction. There was some contentiousness around this. I mean, it seemed like most people said a year is fine. I actually did like Daryl's suggestion of tying it to the building permit. That made sense to me, and that sort of makes it, someone else is kind of overseeing it, if you will, rather than us trying to keep track of it. So that's one we could talk about, but those were the options I heard. And I think the majority saying, well, yeah, keep it a year, even though we know that's not long enough, but you can renew it, or we tie it to some other active permit. The third one, I think was a no-brainer that everybody agreed we should eliminate the 180-day limit, the RV park. Mm-hmm. So we ought to proceed with changing the code. We can, and I think I may even have made, that's one of the motions I threw out on the table last time, so we could do that one.
Yeah.
Number four, the RVs as employee housing on the commercial sites. I think there was general agreement that that should be allowed. That I had questions about this ADU commercial and not calling it permanent and all of that, but I think in general we said yes, there should be a way to provide employee housing on commercial sites. The last one, I continue to think is a can of worms about RVs being on, not on commercial sites, but not owned. So the first one and the last one, there's still some discussion to be had, but the three in between, I think we probably could come up with motions that we would adopt. That's my quick summary there. So
can I make kind of a comment slash question?
Go ahead.
So it was kind of said in the last meeting, and I think it goes forward of exactly what Nancy just broke down, but it's, you don't have to open everything all up at once. There has been a lot of great conversation about moving things forward, helping the town move along. And so to see it as the town really is wanting to put all of these forward, but that doesn't mean that you have to change every one of them right now. And so the things that seem to be the consensus and have a little less contention to get them moving forward now. And if you can get those moved on, and then the other ones, maybe let them, there's going to be a lot more conversation in them. It's going to take a little while. And so if you can, I mean, it was that thing too, even as Susan Heaton left, she said, it would be really nice if you guys could do this sooner than later as our season is opening. And so I think things like that, when you have conversations about like changing the 180 days and looking at letting them have RVs on the commercial, if you know that those are things and they're kind of easy to put in, is there a reason that we can't like change that wording, move those three through, and then give the other things the time that they deserve to have that conversation?
And can we take this information and be prepared to make some motions at the next meeting? Mm-hmm. I think that's another thing, is that we should take this information and maybe have Nancy, I don't know who else would want to make motions, so that those motions would be ready for the next meeting. And I am going to, and So, Tina, what do you think about that as far as us?
Yeah, it sounds great. Okay. That sounds great.
Okay. And then, Lee, I've been wanting to bring you in on this because I talked to Lee this morning about this meeting, and I just wanted to get a comment from Lee before we close and see. I just want to know how you felt about this.
Okay. I guess that there are a couple of different angles here. A lot of the things that have been discussed were solved in the draft ordinance language that I sent you. For instance, tying construction to the permits. That's in the language I sent you. The word permanent is not in the language I sent you for well-reasoned reasons. And I guess my question is whether you guys actually want help on this or not.
Okay, so I think I would like to see where that's tied to. So another thing that you brought up, and I want this to be, so this is a question to, I think that Lee has said is, are we going to continue to look at this RV information, or are we going to wait and let this be a part of zoning? Because we're talking about zoning in the future. And I think, Lee, that you talked about that. The mayor brought up zoning. And so you made a comment about that also, Lee.
Well, I can dive in there, but I would like everyone to keep the question I just asked in mind.
Right.
You guys are not going to meet the deadline of being ready to comply with SB 174 if you spend very much more time on RVs. You just aren't. Period.
So
let me please speak.
Yeah, sorry.
Not being interrupted. You can take what you heard tonight and change the length of stay in campgrounds and feel like you're totally justified with that. So should you actually want my help in doing this, which is not clear to me, I would write up a motion saying, let's do that. And that language is, in fact, already written in materials that you guys already have. If you want to facilitate employee housing on commercial premises, that language is already there. And I will just remind you that any significant change to commercial requires a conditional use permit so that you can address the issues like density. All that is within the commercial development standards. They could probably be tweaked to be a little more specific, but there is something in there that addresses everything, or that allows the Planning Commission to address everything was there. The question about employee housing that is not on site, in my estimation, is a really important one. But I don't know that you have enough clarity about how that would work to proceed. And you certainly don't have enough clarity about making RVs single family dwellings for the purposes of your zoning. And so what I would like to suggest you do is to say, hey, let's have a motion on eliminating the length of stay limitation on campgrounds. Let's have a motion on tweaking the language, and I will be, I will write you an explanation of why the word accessory is so important. But given all that, if you don't like the word accessory, we can change it to something else. But I think that you should have two motions, one to change the length of stay, one to deal with allowing accessory dwellings on commercial premises. And I think you should set the rest aside so that you have time enough to actually deal with getting on to SB 174 compliance. That's my advice.
I think the other one, so the three motions that I put forth at the last meeting that were attached in this, one was to change our definition to the state definition, which we didn't talk about, but you could talk about that. But one, the second motion was to amend section 153.156, which is about the how long you can live in an RV while you're building your house. That's, you know, that okay. change could yeah. be made. That yep. motion already exists. Yep. And then I also put forth a motion which was based on amending 153.430 to eliminate the limit on the campground stays. So we have the language for those two motions already. The one that we don't have, which Lee was just talking about, is the use of RVs for employee housing on commercial sites. So we could generate that. And I think, is that, was that in your motions, Lee, last from last time?
I think that, yeah, we're on pretty much the same wavelength. I see no need to change the definition, but if you guys want to make the definition more complicated rather than less, that's fine with me. So really we need to, but I guess we could do the construction thing if everybody is willing to say we'll tie it to permits that have been issued for the main building, for the building that's actually being built. I think we could do that and have everybody be pretty close to agreement, which is pretty much the motion that Nancy wrote.
I tied it to a time. But I agree. If we agree that we tie it to a permit application or a permit, I mean, I think.
Well, that's already in the language that I gave you guys. I mean, to me, trying to do more than that gets you into conversations that could take a long time. And maybe some of them should take a long time. I'm not criticizing that at all, because they are, they're difficult issues from some points of view. But my suggestion to the commission is set a hearing on the three or four things that seem to have some clarity and some support, and set the rest aside so that you can get to work on the subdivision realities that we have to face. You're not going to get there easily anyway, and you're certainly not going to get there at all if you go back to these more complicated parts of the RVs. So I would be happy to, you know, based on what Nancy did and the stuff that I sent you, put together a new revised ordinance for adoption for people to look at and move forward from there. But again, like I said at the very beginning, I'm not clear that you guys actually want help on this. So you guys need to see.
Nancy just made me a thing.
I'm happy to tweak this and I think we're close enough with what you've done already, Lee, and what we talked about tonight, and then the motions that I put together. So I'm happy to bring forth those three motions at the next meeting if that's helpful. I mean, that alleviates you having to spend more time on it, Lee. I'd rather have you spend the time with Caden working on complying with SB 174, honestly. And I do totally agree with you that trying to resolve this and spending more time on RVs when we really have higher priorities with personally, I don't think we need to do that, but others may feel differently.
So how do we feel about having Lee and Nancy take these three motions and get them ready for the meeting in March? Or Nancy?
I want Lee to work on SB 174.
So let's have Nancy. How do we feel? I'm fine with Nancy doing the three motions for the meeting, for our meeting on March 14th.
It's going to take more than three motions because we have at least a fourth topic. So how about we just say that we prepare the motions that are necessary and see what you get, okay?
Yeah, I agree.
We need to leave some space here for things to work. I mean, for one thing, Nancy has a motion about the definition, which nobody discussed. And, you know, it's fine to bring it up. I don't object to that one way or the other, but it wasn't even on the list, and it would be, that would also make four motions at least. So I think we need a comprehensive set of motions, and I guess I would suggest that Nancy and I could communicate about how to put those into a forum the commission can go. The other motion that has to happen is a motion to take the whole thing to public hearing.
Right.
So yeah, let's not put a number on motions that we then I'm come sorry. Back and have to change.
Yeah. So let's not put a number on the motion motions right now. And does anybody want to talk about number one as far as do we want to talk about the changes, our current definition in the state? A definition, because that is one of the motions. So do we want to take the time tonight to talk about that, or do you want to do it at the meeting in March?
I think it's a motion, and then those, I mean, I know what I'm going to vote on, but, you know, I don't think we can vote at this time. So I would say it should go to the meeting as a motion.
Well, and so what I'm saying, Tina, is do we want to just discuss, not make any kind of motion or anything, but like Lee said, we did talk about looking at some of these notes that Lee and Nancy made. Do we want to talk about motion one? I mean, do you want to do that tonight or?
Yeah, that'd be fine. I don't think it's necessary.
Okay. Daryl, did you get a chance to look at that at all? So the Nancy's motions as far as this is our current definition and what the state definition is. Have you seen that?
My suggestion was just to change, to be consistent with state language.
You see that?
And, I haven't gone through it closely yet.
Okay. So Nancy?
It's more of... anal personality or something that says, why do we have our own definition of RVs when the state defines RVs? And so it's not a significant change in the definition. But it's like, why do we perpetuate something different than what the state has already defined?
So Tina, so you may, I don't really have there's a part of me that wants to go with the state definition, to make it consistent. That's really my only comment on that. There is a part of me that wants to do that. Go ahead, Tina.
Well, I just feel like our definition defines how we are dealing with RVs, and the state has many, many definitions that deal with RVs, and that basically what someone will look at in our ordinance on a definition will not be referring also to the state definition and having, I don't know, I think whatever definition we have there, as long as it actually identifies what we want to have identified for that particular RV at this point and this situation. I read them both, and anyway, it doesn't really matter, I guess, but it's to me. So it obviously matters to some people, which is great, but I think there, I'd have to reread it again, and I needed to highlight it. But there isn't anything in our definition that I don't agree with.
Thank you, Tina. I think you made a good point. Thank you.
I have to look at this a little bit closer because if there are multiple definitions of this on here, the state definitions It's a vehicular unit other than mobile home. So I thought RVs included both, you know, fifth wheels, bumper trailers, and mobile homes. So, yeah, I would have to look at the spacer.
Okay, so then I'll say, you know, if you and Nancy, or, you know, like, if we can get these ready so that they would be ready for motions. There's three or four of them at the next meeting. Daryl, I mean, I think if you want to have input, there isn't, you know, you should have some input too.
Okay.
So, okay. So, does anyone have any other comments on? So at this point, I feel like what we're going to do with the information that we have tonight is make some motions on, like, three or that Nancy started, maybe Lee's got some information, and that will come. We'll bring those to the meeting and put them on the agenda for March 14th. Does anybody else have any comments before we close the meeting?
Well, I would just say that, you know, when we're reviewing the motions, we should also review the ordinance that was, you know, the draft ordinance too, as, you know, what we would change there that might be helpful in getting things clear as far as what is going to be in our ordinance.
Sorry, Tina, I didn't understand what you just said.
So we're just going to pass... We're just going to pass what we want to be in the RV ordinance, correct? Changes?
Through motions. Right. The ones that through we talked about tonight, and then we'll draft language, motion,
right.
And some of which we've already started.
Right, which Lee has already set up. I mean, I think that there is something set up for us to use also, unless we want to change all of the language that Lee's draft has.
We're talking about Lee's draft. Yeah, we're not. Yeah. I mean, there's some language that we would extract from there that would be part of the motions that we would make. But there was a lot of the language in there was about having RVs be single family dwellings.
Right.
We're not going to make a motion on that. So we're not going to use that ordinance.
Okay.
We're talking about making motions that Nancy, the three motions plus another one. And so what I'm saying, Tina, is that we talk about this, and then when we get to the meeting on March 14th, there will be three to four or whatever motions that we can talk about and see if we want to take it to a public meeting or public hearing.
Okay.
Does that sound good?
Yep.
Okay. So is there anything else? Are we ready to adjourn?
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you. Dana, have fun.
No, it's still sunny, Betty. It's natural sun.
Oh, I hope you guys are ready to read 11 pages of notes.
Yes. But